fighting today in terms of the pain and the suffering. No different here. So Muslims are far more humane with regards to the killing of animals than the non-Muslims would have us believe. But back to the issue of abortion from an Islamic perspective, what we're saying here is that though one may abort before the fifth month, we are still taking a life. It's not a human life, but we're still taking a life, which is prohibited. And the only time that we can take that life is, legitimately, is if that life is now threatening the life of the mother. In the case where she has what is called an ectopic pregnancy, pregnancy in the fallopian tubes, where if that child were to develop, it would kill her, yes, abort at that point to save her life. This is the basic circumstance under which abortion is permissible. Some scholars have also included circumstances of rape. If it's in the very early stages, let's say before the child starts to take form, if it's still in the clump stage, where the arms and head and nose, all these things have not differentiated. Up until that point, you know, to abort in cases of rape, some scholars have permitted it. Especially in societies, places like in Bosnia, you know, where, you know, people become very intolerant. You know, the Serbs rape Muslim women in a massive scale. In a massive scale. And they held them, making sure that they would, you know, that they were, till they were pregnant. They raped them continually in a massive scale. In order to destroy the families, because in that society, as in many Muslim societies, because of the fact that, you know, the issues of chastity are held high, especially in the case of women. You know, and this is something, again, you know, where there is something of a double standard you can find, unfortunately, amongst Muslims who have emigrated to North America, where they'll be very careful about their daughters. You know, I know that this is in England, for example, where they have many girls' schools, but the boys' schools, they don't have. So the girls' schools, they protect the girls, but the boys, they can do their thing, doesn't matter. No one knows, doesn't show. But for a girl, if she gets pregnant, you know, this, so it's double standard, you know. But anyway, the point is that what that mentality that comes out of that is that if a girl is raped, a woman is raped, though it is raped, they tend to blame the woman. Even in a circumstance like in Bosnia where the women have been raped in large scales, you'll find the males still blaming the woman, not wanting to have anything to do with them, so they become like ostracized pariahs in the society, and they become, you know, they become fresh meat for the missionaries. Of course, the missionaries will focus on these, they set up special camps, counseling and everything for them, you know, to look after these people. Huge numbers of them right now being Christianized. I mean, of course, their deen was very weak in the first place, but now they're under the onslaught of Christian propaganda in the refugee camps and etc. inside Bosnia as well as outside Bosnia today. So, in the cases where, you know, women raise this issue to Muslim scholars, in cases like this where they've been raped, whether it's permissible for them to abort the child in order to save their own deen, ultimately, to save themselves within that society, some scholars have permitted it. In the case of artificial insemination, Oh, and I should add to this, you know, in the case of contraception, because it's sort of related to abortion, I'll just deal with it at the same time, that from an Islamic perspective, you know, contraception is permissible. It's not preferable. Prophet ﷺ has said, "Tanakahu takatharu," you know, marry and have many offspring. Right, this is the encouragement. We're encouraged to marry and have many offspring. So the issue of contraception, which is to reduce the offspring, is against this sunnah. On the basis of that, it is not preferable. But We know that Prophet ﷺ, though he told us to have many children, companions came to him and asked him whether they could practice a form of contraception which was done at that time, and he permitted it. So on the basis of that, we have to accept that it is permissible. Now, the methods which may be used cannot include those which have been scientifically proven to be harmful. If there are methods which scientific research has shown to be consistently harmful to women, then to use these methods would not be legitimate. They have to be ones which, as far as is known, are safe. But as a choice for human beings, Muslims, contraception is permissible. But abortion would not be considered as a mode of contraception. Because then when they think about birth control in the Western context, this includes abortion. Birth control from the Islamic concept does not include abortion. An area related to this is what they call artificial insemination, where the sperm of a man, the ovum of a woman, put together in a petri dish, when it takes, develops, then it's put inside the woman. Okay. This may be done, Islamically permitted, if a woman has difficulty conceiving due to problems, she may have cysts or whatever, the eggs are there but they can't get into the womb to be fertilized, etc. So this is an assistance. Her eggs are combined with her husband's sperm and the embryo put back in her womb. That is permissible according to Islamic law. This is only assistance. But any other form where it involves the sperm of another man, because her husband is sterile, for example, so you get another man's sperm and mix with her her ova, this is not acceptable. Or to take her husband's sperm, her ova, and put it in her mother's womb, or her sister's womb, or her daughter's womb, or anybody else's womb, this is not permissible. That child will not be considered to be the child of those parents in from Islamic perspective. And we know full well, you know, that in an Islamic context, you know, if a woman breastfeeds the child of another woman, then that child becomes her child also, in the sense that that child cannot marry her own children. This is the son or daughter by rida'a, or by breastfeeding, according to Islamic law. So how much more if that child grew in her womb? So if that child grows in the womb of the sister, or even in the womb of the daughter. So from an Islamic perspective, the only permissible method is that of assisting that woman and the man by combining the sperm and the ova outside of the womb and placing it back inside of that same womb. The last issue, just touch on it again, from an Islamic perspective, you know, organ donation is permissible. Donating one's body to science, no. But you end up on some doctors as a cadaver being cut up, your head going someplace, your arms, whatever else, people experimenting on you, no. But an organ taken from your body to save the life of another human being is permissible. Whether you are living or whether you have died, meaning, for example, your relative kidneys have failed, you have the same blood type, your kidney can save their life, yes, it's permissible for you to take one of your kidneys and give it to them. So while living, or even after death. As we say, though it is only taking what is necessary, taking absolutely what is necessary to help save another life. And this is on the basis that harm, if a small harm prevents a greater harm, then it is permissible to do that smaller harm. The harm which comes from you taking out a kidney, because it does harm you, is less than the harm which comes from your relative, your brother, your sister, or whoever dying, the greater harm. So to save their life, it is permissible. Okay, those are the issues which are mostly concerning female oppression of female, etc. And we've dealt with also organ donation as addition. Inshallah, we'll pause here for any questions that you would like to raise before going into our final phase of issues.
When you talk about fertility drugs and anal pregnancy.
Oh yeah, okay. Two issues, that of fertility drugs and female circumcision. Fertility drugs, where these drugs are used to, you know, increase the production of ova, etc. This is an assistance. You know, in general, this is not, there's no objection, Islamically no objection from it. In the case, there's another issue that comes up related somewhat to it, where they take embryos, they save these embryos, right? Because they make 3-4 embryos and then they end up saving them. They put one in, you got pregnant, you had a child, and they still have these other embryos. Or, you know, in cases where, for example, the man and the woman, they divorce afterwards, you know, and the embryos are still there, a woman is fighting to get this embryo to put back inside herself, etc. You know, the idea of saving these embryos, really, Islamically speaking, would be abhorrent. You know, you produce the embryo, what is necessary to try to fertilize, but to save bunches of them, putting them on ice, holding them for years and things like this, this would be considered abhorrent Islamically. The other issue, which was that of female circumcision, keep these separate, these are the questions probably for the women. The other issue, which is that of female circumcision, we know that according to Islamic law, Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam permitted it. When he came to Medina, it was being done there. It wasn't done in Mecca, it wasn't known, wasn't practiced there, but it was a custom in Medina. And he, Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, permitted that it be done, but he instructed that only a small portion be taken. Meaning, as it was interpreted by the early scholars, that only the tip of the clitoris may be removed. This is just to put a little scar tissue there to decrease its sensitivity. And, you know, similar to the scar tissue that comes around the male organ when the male is circumcised. This much Islam has permitted, not instructed, but permitted. Now the practice common in places like Egypt and Sudan, Somalia, other parts of the Muslim world, as well as the Muslim non-Muslim world, where, you know, it involves removing parts, body parts, of the woman's private parts, sewing them up and all these other kinds of things. These, which have been classified in general as genital mutilation, are against Islamic law. Islam is opposed to this completely. So this thing which has been leveled on human beings, on Muslims, as being, you know, promoters of the oppression of women through this genital mutilation, is actually in fact not, it's not correct to attribute it to Islam, but to Muslim practices which are unacceptable, yes. those who want to take the position that even the amount which is permitted by Islamic law, that even this should be opposed. Of course, all we can say is that's your opinion. If Muslim society agrees and feels that they accept this, then that is their opinion. There is no harm coming to the woman where it stays within the bounds of Islamic practice. There is a hadith cited by Al-Albani in his book about how to perform prayers, in which he stated that there is raising the hands with every takbir during the prayer. What about the raising of the hands during takbir when one goes to sujood? Well, there is, you know, general statement of raising of the hands. Well, this is not really related to our topic here, but general raising of the hands at the time of takbir. But we know when coming out of ruku' that the raising of the hands takes place there and not at the time of making the takbir before going into sujood. But sitting up from sujood and going back into sujood, there are authentic narrations in Abu Dawood and the Tirmidhi which identify that on some occasions the Prophet ﷺ also raised his hands there. What kind of sexual relation is permissible in Islam? What about using of condoms during sex? I think this is already covered. Sexual relations are whatever does not include anal sex. Outside of that, Islam has not prohibited anything else. If a woman sights the moon, is her testimony sufficient? Yes. As again, this is not an issue which requires somebody to remind somebody who forgets. As for witnesses, by taking your explanation of why the ratio is 2-1, then some may say that since women are working, this condition is nullified, but the law of Allah cannot be nullified. Well, as I said, the law of Allah, therefore there might be other reasons that only Allah knows, right? Well, Allah said in the Quran is that they might forget. So we cannot say that this isn't the reason. Allah said it's the reason, then it is the reason. It's not to say that there may not be other reasons. I cannot say no. But the primary reason is this. Now the fact that there is a distortion of the role of the female in society, in a particular society, in Western society today, which does not represent the majority of humankind, is not sufficient to say we nullify this law because the circumstances are different here. No. The law remains because the masses of humankind, the situation remains the same. That's how it is. The laws of Allah came for the generality, not for the specific. If one pronounced divorce on one's wife, when one had knowledge of the rules of divorce, but it was done out of anger, and then he changes his mind or comes back to his right state of mind, does this count as one divorce? Most scholars hold that it doesn't count as divorce. If it was done out of anger, or if it is done not meaning divorce, but as a threat, for example, that these are not classified as divorce. How would you respond to those who say rape is not about sex, but about hatred for women and gaining power over women? Well, I would say that gaining power over women, Western society in general, has men in power over women. You know, the control of the fashions, the control of, you know, so much in the society, there is control over women. So those who want to say, well, there's a hatred for women and gaining power of women, this is what's behind sex. Okay, psychologists have, you know, or sociologists or psychiatrists have analyzed some rapists and okay, they've expressed this. But to say this is the motivating factor, it has nothing to do with sex, I think this is quite far-fetched. This is quite far-fetched. because hatred for women, you know, can be fulfilled by battering them to death. So many other things you can do. I mean, or could be done. Can a woman who wishes to marry a good Muslim man of good character change her wali if his basis of rejecting this prospective groom is superficial, wrong, i.e. rejection of the on the basis of different ethno-cultural or socio-economic background? Yes, it is possible that the wali, you know, if the objections are not based on Islamic considerations, if the objections are un-Islamic, then the woman does have the right to seek a recourse by turning her guardianship over to the courts or over to the leader of the community where there is no Islamic courts. Question on meat. I heard that there's a new way to kill animals in Canada where the slaughterhouses put the animals on a belt, one by one. A machine kills the animal. Knowing this, is it still permissible to eat the meat of the people of the book? The issue of whether they kill it on a belt, or whether they kill it one by one, or by a machine, you know, the point is they're killing the animal. They are people of the book. As long as the neck of the animal is cut whilst the animal is alive, then according to Islamic law, it is permissible to eat those animals. In the case of pregnancies where the life of the woman is in danger, is it obligatory for a woman to get an abortion? Obligatory. Well, according to Islamic law, they would intervene. If a woman chose to allow that child to be born at the expense of her own life, that is between her and Allah. But as long as the Islamic legal system recognizes and sees her life in danger, they would step in and abort the child to save her life. Because you see, a woman, you know, on an emotional basis, you know, very strong emotional basis, you know, could decide, make this kind of decision to die for the sake of giving birth to the child, to please her husband or whatever else, you know, but really, you know, from the Islamic perspective, you know, if she survives, then it's possible for her to have other children. If she dies, that's it. You know, her life is given precedence. Her complete life is given precedence over a potential life. Please clarify, is abortion allowed before the fifth month of pregnancy? Please state where is the source of the embryo becomes a life form only after 5 months. Okay. Abortion is not allowed before the 5 months of pregnancy. Abortion is not allowed in Islam, period. We said in cases of threat to the mother's life, yes, this is when abortion comes in. In the case where some scholars permitted in the case of rape, this is, again, those scholars will say if it is before the 5th month. Where does the issue of the 5th month come from? You can find this in Sahih Bukhari, Sahih Muslim, the Hadith. The Prophet ﷺ said that the child, each one of us, comes together for 40 days in the mother's womb like an oily fluid. Then 40 days like a leech-like clot. Then 40 days like a clump of flesh. And then the angel comes and blows the spirit into the child. Yesterday you discussed the issue of a Muslim man marrying a Jew or a Christian. And Yusuf Ali's translation uses the word chaste when describing the women of the book among whom Muslims may marry. What exactly does chaste mean? Well, this is a condition which I neglected to mention. Thank you for mentioning this, because it does clearly say, not only in the translation, this is the Arabic, Al-Muhsanat من الذين أوتوا الكتاب. محسنات, this is a chaste woman, meaning a virgin. A woman who is a virgin, or a woman whose background is that of marriage. Her relationship is that of marriage. She is divorced now, or she is widowed. You know, this woman, where her sexual relations were within the bounds of marriage only, or she has not had sexual relations. These are the women that we may marry of the women of the book. Of course, in practical terms, so this is a point to consider, where today a woman who reaches puberty, you know, which reaches her teens, etc., who hasn't had sexual relations is looked at as some kind of oddball, something wrong with her, you know, where in fact you'd be very hard pressed to find such a woman, a non-Muslim woman who is chaste, who is a virgin. I mean, it rules out, I mean, the brothers who come here from the Middle East, you know, or other parts of the Muslim world, India and Pakistan, who, you know, meet women in bars and they're going to go and marry these women because they just love the way they were dancing or whatever, you know. They just, oh, this got to marry this one. You know, this kind of attitude is totally wrong. You know, and Islamically speaking, it is not within the bounds of what has been defined as what is permissible for a Muslim man to marry of the women of the book. So thank you for reminding me of that point, that chastity is a condition for marrying women from the people of the book. If you say that there should be a separation in education, what can be said of women going out of their homes in order to attain education in schools? Furthermore, what about pursuing a career in a co-ed environment? Well, as I said, separation in education, this is a basic principle in Islamic society, wherein once the children reach the age of around 7 to 10, then they should be separated in their schools. Separated, if possible, if one can afford to have separate schools for the girls and the boys, yes. Or at least they're separated in their classrooms, you know, the boys in the front, the girls in the back, you know. Some separation should be maintained within the schools, especially those schools where they don't have the means to provide completely separate education for males and females. Now, in this environment, in this society, where schools are not available, Muslim schools are not available, to say, well, since there isn't separate education available, women shouldn't be educated, this is social suicide. This is social suicide. Because for us to develop a community here, because ultimately, as Muslims, we should not see ourselves as being establishing Muslim families where we just live on our own, you know, you have your own apartment or you have your own house and you maintain your Islam between you and your wife and your children, you know, this is your responsibility. Beyond that, this is incorrect to look at ourselves living this way. Your neighbors are all non-Muslims all around you. The environment, the neighborhood, everything, this is all a non-Muslim environment. For you to live like this, this is a cursed situation. Prophet ﷺ said that he absolves himself from a Muslim who dies in the midst of the disbelievers. This is a situation which is not permissible according to Islamic law. It is a requirement, it is a must that Muslims who are here, for example, here in Montreal, that they attempt to create neighborhoods, Muslim neighborhoods, where your neighbors are other Muslims. You're living in an area, not creating ghettos. You know, I'm not talking about creating ghettos, I'm talking about Muslim neighborhoods, right? Where the majority of the people in this area are Muslims, where you can control your environment, where your children are interacting with other Muslim kids, your wives are interacting with other Muslim women, you know, your school is in that neighborhood, your masjid is in that neighborhood. This is what we should be developing. This is the hijrah. This much of hijrah remains an obligation on Muslims in the West here. Because for us to live these separate individual scattered lives is, as I said, something cursed. And what it does, of course, is it promotes the destruction of our families, the generations of our children going to non-Muslim schools, etc., growing up with all non-Muslim friends, etc., who in the end become non-Muslims. This is what we're doing. We have the history of people coming here to Canada and to America, you know, for the last 70 years, where we have whole generations that have disappeared totally. Out west, you can go out into Alberta and you know, in other parts of the states, and so you can find where they have just disappeared. People came,
and they're no longer there. It is essential. Hijra remains an obligation on Muslims until the last day. Prophet Muhammad said, لا تنقطع الهجرة حتى تنقطع التوبة. Hijra will not end until the acceptance of repentance ends. ولا تنقطع التوبة حتى تطلع الشمس من مغربها. And Tawbah will not end until the sun rises in the west. So Hijra remains an obligation on Muslims. It is the sunnah of Rasulullah. We know from the seerah that this was the turning point for Islam from the period of oppression in Mecca, where Muslims were scattered, they were under pressure, etc., etc. When the Hijra was made to Medina and the community was formed, this was the beginning of the end for disbelief in that country, in that land, and for the spread of Islam throughout the world. So this is something that we must work towards and we must develop. Meaning, we need to have Muslim female gynecologists in Muslim clinics. A Muslim clinic is not different from a non-Muslim clinic in the sense of what goes on there, in the sense that, you know, treatment, medical treatment takes place. The non-Muslim can come in there and be treated medically as well as Muslims. So it's not only Muslims only exclusive. We don't have any sign on the door which says Muslims only. No. But if a female comes into that clinic and says, I want this male gynecologist to, you know, no, we say, no, okay, we have limitations here. Gynecology, this is a specialty for Muslim women. So for us to say, we not have our girls go to school and study, we don't need any female gynecologists, then your wife gets pregnant. She has to see a gynecologist. And you're telling her, you're very much, you know, practicing the deen, yes, she should cover herself and, you know, don't go out exposing yourself. But then now you're telling her to go into this office and take off her clothes, expose herself, and have this man put his hands in her private parts. And then you're saying, cover yourself? What is the meaning of this? Women shouldn't get education? What is the meaning of this? This is what I refer to as social Islamic suicide. This is a society committing suicide by denying its women to gain this education so that they can protect the other women in society. This is essential. So the idea of women, because it means now there's a harm here, yes, women going into these universities, there's harm in the schools, there's harm. But the greater harm of us having to put our women in the hands of non-Muslim men is far greater than the harm that comes from the women going into this situation. And of course, when we send a daughter into college or whatever to study, we should send daughters who we feel have the deen, you know, under control. Not a daughter who is kind of shaky, you know, she's, you can see her, she's Michael Jackson at home, Madonna and everything else. You're going to put her into this situation? No, of course. It's a suicide, yes, keep her home. If you have one of those, keep them home, don't send them to school. Right? Until you can get her in line, let her understand who she is as a Muslim woman, etc., etc., then you can put her into, you know, these education systems, and inshallah she can survive, right? And come back with some knowledge that can benefit the community. What's the purpose of Muslim women in Muslim students associations? Well, Muslim students associations is for women to be on campus, to be in studies. It is important that they be in contact with other Muslims, specifically other Muslim women, and to whatever degree necessary, other Muslim men, to protect their Islam on campus. Again, that's the value that is there. This is the environment, to try to create as much as possible within the student context an Islamic environment for those students. So, you know, where the MSA is functioning, of course, properly, you know, with these Islamic guidelines, then we can see the value. I mean, where the MSA becomes just, you know, a party, you know, we get together and have our parties, socialize and this type of thing, and of course, we can raise this type of question. Please state the source which states that contraceptions are permissible and that artificial insemination is permissible. Well, we have a law, right? We have a lot. The one about contraception, the hadith of Azal, these hadiths are well known. Anybody recall what book of hadith it's in? It's well known, authentic hadith, a number of narrations. If this person needs it, I can't quote it which book, but it is from among the authentic books. It's well known hadith, you know. If they wish, I can dig it up for them exactly, the reference. Otherwise, the other issue of artificial insemination, this comes under the general category of what? In Islamic law, when we deal with things which are classified as ibadat, right? Ibadat, worship. Acts that are primarily worship. And we deal with things that are called mu'amalat. Acts which are primarily not worship, but which may have aspects of worship connected to them. You know, the scholars divide things into these two basic categories. The rule concerning ibadat is that for you to do any act of ibadah, there must be a clear permit from Rasulullah ﷺ to do it. Right? This is based on the principle that Prophet ﷺ said, whoever brings anything new in this religion of ours is not accepted by Allah. Right? Innovation. To protect against innovation, then the rule is that if you want to do anything, you must have a permit for it in the area of ibadah. But now in the area of mu'amalat, right? Your day-to-day social and socio-economic interactions, which are not primarily ibadah, right? In this area, the rule is that all is permissible except that which is prohibited. That is the rule, based on the statements of Allah in the Quran with regards to foods, etc., etc., that it is all permissible except for these specific things which have been delineated. So that is the general rule according to Islamic law. This is one of the maxims of fiqh. So, when we look at the situation of artificial insemination, we have to question ourselves, is artificial insemination ibadah or mu'amala? Obviously it's not ibadah, it is mu'amala. This is biological exchange, body parts, whatever, these type of things. This is mu'amala, it's not ibadah. So, this sister who has asked for the source or the evidence, the permission, well, we don't say, where is the permission? We ask, where is the prohibition? In this case, because it's not ibadah, it is mu'amala, then to say it is not permitted, one has to bring evidence. To say it is permitted is taking things as they are. What do you mean by hijra? Hijra to a Muslim country? No, not necessarily. Hijra, as I mentioned, people here in Montreal, I said that the principle of hijra stands for you here. I'm not meaning that everybody packs up their bags and heads out of Montreal. No. And for those who feel that this life has become so oppressive here, their children are being destroyed and they have the means to leave, they want to leave, it's perfectly permissible, it's justifiable. But for the mass of the people who can't do that, or feel that they have a role to play here, then they should come together. The hijra should be, as I said, to create neighborhoods. Not necessarily from country to country, because if we looked at the hijra in the time of Prophet ﷺ, there were two hijras. One which was country to country, which was the first hijra to Abyssinia, right? That was for survival. That didn't spread Islam. I mean, beyond the Najashi accepting Islam, I mean, it was not the turning point in the history. The turning point was the hijra which was internal, when they went from Mecca to Medina. That is hijra within Arabia. So people make a hijra out of here to Muslim countries in the east or whatever. This is not going to change the situation here. It is for survival, those who wish to do it. But the one which is going to change the situation here in the country is the one which is the internal hijra, where people come and create communities, neighborhoods, environments in which they can now impact on the society. Thank you. During the 3 month period after divorce is pronounced, would any sexual relations nullify the divorce? Are any sexual relations permitted during the period of that period of time? Okay. It is held by some scholars that just any form of sexual relation will nullify the divorce. Means that the man has taken the woman back. But a number of other scholars hold, and it is within the schools of Islamic law, that that sexual relation, if sexual relation takes place, if it is not with the intention, expressed intention of taking the woman back, in and of itself, it does not constitute nullification of the divorce. If we take an organ from the pig, or a pig, is a Muslim, or can the Muslim pray while we have that organ? Yes. Is cloning permissible in Islam? If cloning doesn't involve human beings, you know, involving animals to increase or produce better breeds of animals or vegetation, etc., this is permissible. Where it involves human beings with the intention of trying to prolong human life, you know, you grow another you. When you get sick, you can take your brain out and stick it in a new body. No, that other you that you're growing here is another human being. That's the reality. If you clone, it's another human being. It's not you anymore. So the idea that you can clone this other being and you keep him there ready for you, for, you know, when the time comes, right? This is nonsense. You're killing another human being to prolong your own life. Is it permissible for women to remove hair from their face or legs? Well, in the case of legs, yes. In the case of hair, removing hair from the face, we have specific prohibition in the case of what Prophet ﷺ had said about women who pluck their eyebrows. This is part of facial hair. As such, to remove the hair from the face would not be permissible unless, as scholars have stated, that the hair on the face reaches the point where it is making them look like a man, growing a beard now, mustache, you know, their hair is going across their eyebrows, they got thick, heavy eyebrows, something like this, which is disfiguring them, you know, disfiguring them. In those kind of cases, that the movement of hair is permissible. In other cases where it's light hair here and that, it's permissible for them to bleach it instead, so it's no longer visible. Last question. Yeah. Two sisters. The younger sister. Two sisters. The younger sister's granddaughter and the elder sister's youngest son want to marry. Okay. I'll have to think about this one here. I better stop here. I look at it and then, you know, figure out what it is exactly. We'll answer this in the next session, inshallah. Subhanaka Allahumma wa bihamdika. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa ant. Astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.